Getting to know yourself can be a lifelong process, especially since you're always growing and changing. Therapy is all about deepening that self-awareness, because sometimes you don't know what you really want until you talk things through. BetterHelp connects you with a licensed therapist online who can take you on that journey of self-discovery from wherever you are. Visit betterhelp.com/positive today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/positive.
We continue. It is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. So if you're just tuning in, we are going to have LeBron James out for some indefinite amount of time. And that is per Shams Charania. We know yesterday LeBron does go down with the injury and ended up coming on back and beating the Dallas Mavericks. But now he has a foot injury and he's going to miss indefinite time. That is the latest from Shams Charania. And Shams just says it's miraculous that LeBron played through the injury that is now expected to require multiple opinion sources said. And the Lakers are bracing for his absence to be multiple weeks, going back to our speculation of how long this would be. It would not surprise me. This is just me talking, no information. If LeBron, with what, they have 20-something games left in the season, if he comes back and plays another game this year, like maybe if they're still alive, final week, 2 weeks of the year, maybe he's able to come back. But also, the fear is that Lakers star LeBron James is likely to miss an extended period of time. That's what Shams said with his right foot injury. James suffered the injury in Sunday's win over Dallas, played through it, and the belief is he'll be sidelined for an indefinite amount of time. And once again, Shams said the Lakers are bracing for his absence to be multiple weeks. So, Hickey, it's a good point by Shams. It's kind of crazy, and sometimes it's adrenaline, but with how bad it looked and him screaming in pain saying it popped, and now we know that this is a serious injury, how LeBron was able to still lead this comeback and play with whatever this, I don't want to say severe injury, but serious injury is, that is kind of impressive by LeBron James, who continues to just defy logic, really.
Absolutely. Like I said, when he went down, it almost kind of looked like a non-contact, which sometimes when you kind of see that, you think, oh, it's even worse than if he got hit somewhere. So
like maybe an Achilles, right?
His foot, and it's like, I don't know if he's going to, you know, even get up. And he got up and somehow didn't even go to the sideline, just got up and walked to the other side of the court and stayed in. It's like I said, his pain tolerance is indescribable, I guess, considering that this is a serious injury. And he kind of played like it was no big deal.
So they got... there's your signature line there. No big deal. No big deal. Coming out of the Rose Bowl when you were a little hammered.
A
little different standards on this one.
I was going to say, LeBron playing through a foot injury, me coming out of a big-time win.
That lowly rated Rose Bowl.
Little different.
So 21 games left for the Lakers is the exact number. If it's several weeks, like bare minimum, let's just say 3 weeks, bare minimum. That would be like if everything goes well, and I would be shocked if it's only 3 weeks, right? But if that's the case, and let's just say somehow he's able to return 3 weeks from now, that's taking us to March 20th. So then there would be 10 games remaining. Now, I'm going to assume that he's not going to be back 3 weeks from now. Like, if you want to tack on two more from that, so let's say we said, what, March 20th? If you tack on two more weeks from that, that then takes you to April 3rd. And if that's the case, then there's only four games left in the season. If I'm a betting man, Hickey, and maybe this is just a pride thing, I would be surprised if LeBron James plays five more basketball games this year. There's only 21 left. And the regular season ends on April 9th. And right now it's February 27th. So if he's going to miss several weeks, I kind of feel like that's going to rule him out for most of March, if not all of March.
I would agree too, because also at the same time, like if you're through the Lakers, you got to look at it. Okay, they're right now a game out of the play-in tournament.
Like, what's the end goal?
LeBron's not going to be there for, let's just say, conservatively the next 3 weeks. Is Anthony Davis going to be in the court the next 3 weeks? Every game? I don't think you could say that with a fact whatsoever. He gets hurt. This season could be spiraled out of control, where let's say if the three-week timeline is right, about 10 games left in the season, but you're sitting there in 13th place, about four or five games out of the play-in, you know, the final play-in spot, is it even worth it? Again, LeBron signed long-term, the next 4 years, right? So if you're the Lakers, you have to start now thinking about, too, is it even worth bringing him back on a guy who's going to be, again, body-wise, playing on his 24th season already? Do you save him for next year and hope that, I mean, at this point, it's kind of the definition of insanity, well, but hope that things break your way next year?
Could we also be fair about it? Is it really the Lakers' decision?
That's also true.
It's, if there is one player in the NBA, in a sport that the player makes pretty much every decision if you're a star player, if LeBron says, I want to come back, he's coming back. I don't think it makes sense when you get into, I hear what you're saying. You're using logic. But if there is a week left in the season and LeBron says, guys, I'm coming back, and the Lakers go, oh, it's not in your best interest, LeBron could say, you don't want to upset me. You upset me, then really, what do you have on the roster?
You're right. If you're the Lakers, you maybe push us to reasons why you shouldn't come back. And maybe LeBron actually listens. Like, they did shut him down the first year in L.A. with the groin injury.
Yeah.
Came back for like a week or whatever it was, and then didn't finish the year.
But he came back.
Maybe the same thing, but yeah, I'm with you. Just
the juice isn't worth the squeeze to play again if you're LeBron. Like, if you're missing the next 3-4 weeks bare minimum, I get it being there for your teammates and trying to exhaust every option to get into the playoffs. But just if you get into the play-in tournament and you're a 10th seed, doesn't mean that you're going to get into the actual playoffs. Like, I don't consider this play-in tournament the start of the postseason. I get it. It's been more exciting than what people thought because you've got bigger star talent that you didn't expect to be in there. But, like, I do wonder what that end goal is there. Like, for the Lakers, what do you think you're doing even if LeBron's able to come back for the final 2 weeks of the season?
And I don't know if trading Russell Westbrook now motivates him to come back because, hey, the Lakers front office went all in. And so, like, you know, like I said, maybe a pride thing. I just want to play even if
I don't think that has anything to do with
it. I don't know. But I think there's definitely a chance we've already seen LeBron for the last time this year.
Now, it would be very LeBron-like. I'm the man. I'm the hero. I come on back. You know, he said, right after the All-Star game, these are the biggest final, 23 games?
23 games of his career, his 20-year career. Those are the biggest regular season games ever.
Like, I'm rolling my eyes still, and I've heard that quote now multiple times. So, I it would not shock me if they are a game or two off the 10 spot with, like, 6 or 7 to play, if then he goes, okay, I have to come back. And I respect that in some part. But at this point, it kind of seems pointless for LeBron to play again in the regular season.
If they're 1 or 2 out with like 5-6 games, I think 100% he'll come back. I think the question is, will they even be that by the time he does come back? Because that's assuming, again, AD is healthy, which you can't assume that.
Well, also all the other teams, I can't assume anything with them either.
Oh, no, yeah, I guess.
This seems like the death of the Lakers. The Lakers season has already been on life support. You know that the plug was eventually going to be pulled. Today seems like this is the day that you pull the plug. We know that the death was coming, but now LeBron James is going to miss multiple weeks with this foot injury. You really don't have anything to gravitate towards, even the most optimistic Lakers fan in the world, to have really any hope in this scenario. Because right now, from the 10th spot, they are a game back. If you want to tell me you don't really believe in the Pelicans and the Trailblazers, right, and some of these other teams could fall, like who knows, the Timberwolves right now on a 3-game losing streak, sure, I could listen to that. But what makes me think that the Lakers are going to be able to take advantage without LeBron James, who is their team?
Their margin for error is razor thin coming out of the All-Star break, and now you've got basically what is a death blow.
Yeah, that's the only way to put it. Okay, 5 questions, 5 answers right now. Let's get to a little onsides, offside. Hot take, Hickey. Hit it!
Zach's taking on the most polarizing issues in sports. Which side of the line of scrimmage will he end up on?
Offside. Defense number 69.
It's Onsides, Offsides with Zach Gelb on CBS Sports Radio.
Bam, 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 bam. All right, what do you got for me today?
All right, Zach, according to Adam Schefter, the Bears are, quote, leaning, unquote, towards trading the number one overall pick. Now, Schefter mentioned that multiple teams have already reached out to Chicago about trading for the top pick. Now, we presume teams like the Texans, Colts, Raiders, and Panthers are some teams interested in making a move to the top spot. But what about teams like the Seahawks, Lions, and Falcons sitting there at 5, 6, and number 8? Onsides or offsides, Zach? The Seahawks, Lions, and Falcons all should try to move up to the number one pick.
By the way, I don't know why, when you said the word leaning, any idea what song came to mind?
Lean with it, rock with it?
No. Lean like a cholo, elbows up, side to side. You remember that song at all growing up?
I know the dance. I can't honestly say I knew the song.
Gotcha. That's fine. But you have an idea of the dance and everything, so. That I don't know why.
All right.
My brain just went in that direction.
Maybe Adam Schefter, too, and that's why I used the word leaning today.
That was Sports Talk Radio ADD, pretty much, is what happened right there. The Seahawks, Lions, and Falcons should all try to move up for the number one pick. It depends. Like, are they in love with Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud, or they just like Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud?
I don't know. I guess in this
case. But, like,
case,
in your scenario here, that's what I'm asking.
They really like him. Yeah.
I kind of feel like the Lions are going to be content going another year with Jared Goff and then seeing what happens after that. But then, if they're supposed to be good again, you wouldn't expect them to be in their top 10 draft pick. And the reason they have the top 10 draft pick right now is because they made the trade with the Rams, and the Rams ended up stinking. I don't expect the Lions to. I think the Seahawks are going to try to bring back Geno Smith. And the Falcons, I would, because you don't really have anyone there. If I'm them, though, all three of those teams, yeah, and the question is, should they? Yeah, they should. Because I still don't know what Jared Goff's going to be. I don't know what Geno Smith's going to be. And the Falcons don't have a quarterback. So if you're a team like the Lions or the Seahawks, you get the best of both worlds where you could bring back like a Geno Smith on a three-year deal. Jared Goff still has 2 years left. And you have them mentor the young quarterback and then delay that young quarterback. How realistic is that? That I don't know, because when you draft a quarterback number one overall, it's tough to have him delay. But if I'm those three teams, I can't tell you I'm 100% sold on the quarterback, so therefore I would move up. But let me tell you this. If I'm a Lions fan or a Seahawks fan, if you're going to be moving up, maybe just give all those assets already for a proven commodity and go get a Lamar Jackson. But then once again, we don't know if Lamar is actually going to be available. So I'll answer your question. Long answer. On sides here that they all should, because I don't really trust what they have currently in place right now. So on sides.
Okay, let's go to the NBA, because Damian Lillard last night was red hot, to say the least, scoring 71 points, including 41 in the first half, to set a new NBA record as he became the first player to score 70 or more points in less than 40 minutes of action. Now, Dame wasn't the only player to drop 71 this season, as Donovan Mitchell also hit that mark back in early January. Now, the record is held by Wilt Chamberlain. Still, that 100 points has been untouched for the last 61 years. And no one's passed even Kobe Bryant's mark of 81 points, as he dropped that total back in 2006. So onsides or offsides, we will see an NBA player score 100 points by himself in a game within the next 5 years.
Offside. Don't get me wrong.
Offside.
What Dame did last night was great, and Dame, I've said for years, is one of my favorite players, is my actually favorite player in the NBA. But I don't think you're going to get someone to get to 100. And the thing that impressed me with Dame is the amount of shots that he took. I think he took 38 shots last night. It was 22 of 38 from the field. You would thought if someone has scored 71 points that the number would be a little bit higher, because they were just jacking up shot after shot after shot. He had a good percentage there, nearly 60% from the field. So I kind of just think that eventually fatigue would settle in. If you're going to get to 100, you're going to have to shoot way more shots than that. Let's see someone get to 90, right, in this era before we start talking about 100. So I don't think it's going to happen. Do you?
I'm going to say yes.
Really?
So. Well, the way the three-point shot now is easier, you get a bad team and a bad night, I think someone will go for it. I think they'll get it.
How many threes do you think you need to hit?
Dame hit 13. I would probably say at least 20? 15. At least 15. Get to 45 right there. Get fouled. Like, that's also probably part of it. You're going to probably have to get to the line bare minimum 15 times just to stop the clock and score.
If someone hits 23s, that's 60 points right there. How many shots are you going to be able to get up in a game to get to 100? And you're also on making all those shots. To me, I think it's just too unrealistic. But go ahead.
Well, let's go back to the NFL, because a bumpy career for Carson Wentz continued earlier today as he was officially released by the Commanders after just 1 year in Washington. The Commanders last year were just 2-5 in games that Wentz started, as he was benched multiple times as well. Now, if he signs with the team this offseason, it will be the fourth team in 4 years for the former number two overall pick, and Wentz is just 30 years old. Onsides or offsides, Carson Wentz will not be on an NFL roster for week one.
He should retire. he won't. But I think someone else is going to give him an opportunity. It'll probably be a disaster because I can't see him being a good sport in the locker room embracing that backup role. But with how many crappy quarterbacks that are second and third string that are in an NFL locker room, Wentz will be in a locker room. So I will go offside when you say Carson Wentz will not be on an NFL roster for week one.
Offside.
The NFL scouting combine is set to commence this week in Indy. And before any workouts even begin, one quarterback has seen his odds to go first overall skyrocket. Florida's Anthony Richardson's odds to be the first pick were 80-1 as late as last week. And in the last few days, according to Caesars Sportsbook, his odds are now just 6-1, tied with Will Levis and Will Anderson Jr. That's third behind Bryce Young and CJ Stroud. So from 80-1 to 6-1 in less than a week. Onsides or offside, Zach, Anthony Richardson will be a top five pick come late April.
Fascinating question. So let's say the Bears move out of the one spot. And if a team like the Texans move up, then they'll take Bryce Young or CJ Stroud. So one of those quarterbacks will be off the board. Then you could see Chicago's at two, then fall back to four and Indy move up to two or someone else. So I would say two quarterbacks are going in the top five. It will be Young and Stroud. But outside of that, like, are the Seahawks taking Anthony Richardson? Like, they do have Geno Smith. If you want to sit Richardson for 2 years, I guess you could do that. I do think Anthony Richardson's going to the top 15. Probably at this rate, top 10. Just because of how many quarterbacks there are. And it's perceived to be that he's the third most thought of quarterback in this draft class. But three in the top five, it's happened before. I don't think it's happening here, though. So I will go offside.
Offside.
And
but
finally,
I'd love to see the Colts do it because you would love that.
I would not. No, no, no.
Yes, yes, yes.
I like how you said offsides. No, no top five pick for Anthony Richardson. That is good news for yours truly. And
well, finally, you never know. Jim could, against all odds, trade back.
Chris Ballard does trade him back.
They were joking about that right at that press conference. Maybe he trades back.
Right before joking about Bryce Young.
With the 11th pick in the draft, the Indianapolis Colts have selected Anthony Richardson, quarterback, Florida.
That would not be good for the show.
Oh, Jim.
That's for sure.
Could have also been playing some mind games there. Make everyone think they're going to take Bryce Young and they have no interest in him.
Possibly. You never know with Jim Mercer. That is for sure. Finally, the Atlanta Hawks have officially hired Quinn Snyder to be their next head coach, replacing Nate McMillan, who was fired last week. Now, Snyder stepped away from the Jazz this past offseason after guiding Utah to the playoffs six straight times. Snyder is the third coach for Trae Young, who saw both Lloyd Pierce and McMillan fired in his 5 years in Atlanta. Onsides or offsides, the Hawks should trade Trae Young if things with Quinn Snyder don't work out. This is obviously not this year. This is, you know, 2 or 3 years of her sitting here and things don't work out. Not immediately.
I'll go offside.
Offside.
Because he's such an entertaining player. Like, I don't think he's someone you build your franchise with. And people that were saying, oh, the Luka deal was so fair, I'd much rather have Luka Doncic. And I get a few years ago, he was awesome. He was great. They got to the Eastern Conference Finals and they lost. But if things just don't work out with Quinn Snyder, yeah, I get why it'd be a poor reflection on Trae Young. But I'm not ready to say that they automatically have to trade him in that regard. But it would be a bad look for him because Quinn Snyder, I don't know why he took that job with the Hawks. I thought he could have got a better job. All right, we'll take a break. We'll do the QB carousel next, and we will land with the Minnesota Vikings.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show. The Super Bowl is over, but the NFL quarterback carousel is just beginning.
You gotta ask yourself a question. Do I feel lucky?
What does the future hold for all 32 NFL teams at the QB position?
Now, I'm going to give you an opportunity to spin this wheel right here.
Let's spin the wheel and find out which teams we hit today. The Minnesota Vikings.
Pete Bursich does a great job alongside Paul Allen on the Vikings radio network. And he played for the Vikings and also coached for the Vikings. Played with the Vikings from 1994 to 2000 and coached from 2002 through 2005. And Pete joins us right now. Pete, thanks for the time. How you been?
I've been great. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing fantastic. When you look back at the Vikings season, You being alongside Paul Allen, what was a more entertaining game for you guys to call? The comeback against the Colts, or was it the game up against Buffalo?
Wow. I think the game in Buffalo was just, and we had so much fun this year, and I think it wasn't that we did anything differently. It was just a matter of the games that were being played. I mean, the comeback against Buffalo was a big deal, right? Big team on the road. But that game against Indianapolis to break a record, the greatest comeback in the history of the NFL, that was pretty amazing too. But I think the Buffalo game was better just because it was better played. It is great to have the biggest comeback, but the problem is you let yourself get down by that many. You know what I mean? So it was it's kind of a tale of two halves, but it was definitely a lot of fun. I think the game in Washington was a lot of fun as well. That was a very emotional game for all of us for many reasons, mainly because the fans sit right in front of you. I mean, they can literally stand up and look in the booth, and we had some weird issues with fans and the whole thing. It was a lot of fun. That whole game was a blast.
Pete Bursich here with us. So I love Paul Allen. I think he's the most entertaining play-by-play man on the radio in the NFL today. How do you describe working with him?
Well, he makes my job easy, and it's kind of like each of us do our own thing, and Paul is a racetrack trained play-by-play guy. He's been calling horse racing for decades, and that's where he got his start. That's his MO. That's what he's all about. And then my job is kind of just keep everything level, right? try to keep everything kind of cool. But
you're really like the hold me back kind of coach. Like, you have to hold him back during the game a little bit, I feel like.
A little bit. I think so. I mean, but that's just kind of how we operate, right? And that's just, kind of who we are. And sometimes I get excited, and most of the time, it's Paul. And it's amazing what he does, the recall and, just the spotters and everything else that's going on around him all throughout the game. He makes it sound, easy. And I think that's the mark of, someone who's really good at what they do. It seems easy. But he's the voice of the Vikings, man. I mean, all the highlights and everything else, that's what you hear, and he does an amazing job. It's been a pleasure, and I'm to work with him, and I've been very lucky to have worked with Paul over the last 17 years now.
What did Kevin O'Connell bring to this football team after taking a step back and watching it all throughout last year?
I think he brought exactly what we thought he would, and that's, Mike Zimmer – was kind of an old school, type of coach, right? He's hard, very, very understated, didn't cheer a lot, didn't say a whole lot. And Kevin's young, right? He's just different. I think he does an amazing job, taking things that are complicated and making them simple, right? The whole thing about you need to be at your best when we need you at your best, just things like that. He does a very good job of getting these players mentally in the position to play. I think the other thing that stood out this year was how he didn't play much, if at all, in preseason. But yet, when we opened up against Green Bay, those guys were all ready to play, and I hadn't really experienced that. We were all kind of like waiting to see and saying, geez, none of these guys have even really been on – some of these guys have not even been on the field the entire preseason. And yet to go out and play as well as they did opening up at home against Green Bay was a big thing too. So the strength and conditioning staff and, the training staff, they all work together. It's a very they use the word collaborative a lot. They use that word all the time. They do that. There's no – football, you get a lot of islands, right? You got the training staff on one island, the strength staff on the other island. Everyone thinks they know best. But this group definitely works together.
Where's your belief level that Kirk Cousins could eventually win a Super Bowl in Minnesota?
I think he can. I mean, he's good enough. Let's put it that way, right? I mean, he's good enough. And teams that have glaring weaknesses don't make it all that way, because at some point it's going to come back to bite you in the rear end. But I do believe he has. I mean, he has the requisite skill and requisite everything that you need for, out of a quarterback, you know, to make it to the big game. You just have to continue to build around him. And obviously, our defense struggled all throughout the year.
Yeah.
And so, address that side of the football, and you know, hopefully not at the expense of the offense. But you know, we'll see.
Do you think they'll extend him? I know he has 1 year left on that deal. Do you think they get an extension done this offseason, Pete Bursich?
I don't know. I mean, I really don't know. I think here's the key with Cousins. I mean, Cousins is and Kevin O'Connell has said this, that accuracy is the most important thing on a quarterback. That's what he looks for most. So it's accuracy, not how well the guy runs and all these other things. And, Cousins is strong-armed and as accurate of a quarterback as there is in the league. He can make all the throws. He can do all those things. He's getting his second year into a system, and it does take about two seasons to really get the entire system installed and guys comfortable with it and running well. He was asked to do a lot more mentally before snaps. You know, he had a lot more say in what went on. He was in meetings a lot. Much more involved, I think, on the whole offensive side. But on the flip side, you know, because he doesn't move much, because he doesn't scramble very much, he sees, you know, we see different types of coverages. You know, you don't play two-man, against a quarterback that can scramble. You really don't. You know, you don't play that against Justin Fields because he'll run for 500 yards against you. So we see little different types of coverages and things because of that. But as long as his arm strength stays the way it is, then he'll be a viable quarterback and as good of a quarterback that you need to win the Super Bowl. That's the thing you have to keep an eye on. You know, he's 33. We didn't see any signs of that this last season, but that's what I think going into the season that everybody's going to have to look at closely or determine is, you know, how long will his arm hold up? Because if the lack of mobility and some of those other things will, you know, they don't carry you. You won't be able to make it for very long or be as effective as you normally are as soon as those skills start to deteriorate.
The name I've been throwing out now for two off seasons is how fun it would be if Lamar Jackson somehow wound up with the Vikings with Justin Jefferson and Dalvin Cook as well. Does that have any shot or is that just a talk show host trying to throw out a scenario there?
I think it'd be fun. Will that happen? I doubt it because again, I go back to, you know, the one thing that Kevin O'Connell likes to see out of his quarterbacks is accuracy. And I think if there's one thing that Lamar Jackson isn't as accurate as a lot of the other quarterbacks in the league. So I don't know if Lamar would fit the system that the Vikings, you know, want to put together and want to have offensively. So, I mean, you know, I could be dead wrong. Who knows? But off the top of my head, my gut feeling said that would be, I don't know if that would be a good marriage in that respect.
Before we let you run, Pete Bursich, you look at the state of the North. It looks like Rodgers, or we think Rodgers, is going to get traded this offseason. The Bears still have a lot of work to do in terms of building that roster. It seems like right now it's Vikings and Lions battling for that NFC North spot, and we got to see how the Vikings are to fix this defense and bring in Flores this offseason to be the new defensive coordinator. Is there at all like fear of regression just going from year one to year two with the new regime at the GM and also the head coaching spot?
Well, I know, you know, no, I think losing Lewis Cine and, you know, we had a lot of injuries, it seems, with our rookies, this year, Andrew Booth. A lot of our higher draft picks, were injured. So that was a tough year for that. We're starting anew again. You know, we're starting anew again on defense, right? So you have a whole new system that's coming into play. Are they going to stick with the 3-4 or go to the 4-3 or a combo pattern or both? Dalvin Tomlinson, I think, was one of our better defensive linemen this year. So having him around. I don't know if Danielle Hunter really made the transition to a 3-4, if that was really his thing. I think it's still up in the air. What is he best, designed or mentally what he wants to do the most? Za'Darius Smith was a great pickup. I thought he had a good year. So yeah, just we got some corner position. There's a lot to be done on the defensive side of the ball. But when you're 31st in the league in a lot of categories, and you know it's easier to go up. It's you start at the bottom and work your way up. So we'll see.
Pete Bursich, appreciate the time. Thanks so much for doing this.
All right, thank you. Take care, guys.
You got it. We'll get to a news brief next. We'll get you on some of the biggest storylines in the world of sports with some audio. And before we get to ACT, let me just tell you that you could thank O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show. Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
Charles Barkley was on First Take, and he was asked if load management is a problem in the NBA.
It's a huge issue. I don't think fans get mad if you're making $30, $40, $50 million if you play basketball every night. But you can't make $30, $40, $50 million and then sit out games. I think it's disrespectful to the game. I think it's disrespectful to the fans. You know what's going to be crazy? In this next TV negotiating deal, we're going to have guys making $70, $80 million a year.
Yeah.
And they're going to be saying, wait a minute, you're going to make $70 million and you can't play basketball 3 or 4 days a week? So, I think load management is a big deal.
So I'm stuck here, Hickey. Because you know me, I hate load management. But then I also realize if you're a team like the Raptors a few years ago where you're intentionally sitting out Kawhi Leonard 20-something games, you win a championship, it's worth it. Now, to get into the current conversation about LeBron tonight, LeBron played so many games, and then eventually that catches up to someone in your body, even though he's still incredible and the court starts to break down. If you're just tuning in, LeBron, the injury that he suffered yesterday that he thought was a pop and then somehow played through it and he had the great comeback and all that, he's now going to miss multiple weeks, according to Shams Charania, and some significant time because he has a foot injury. I saw CBS Sports put out a graphic, LeBron James injury history, games missed. First 15 seasons, 71. Last five seasons, all of Lakers, 98. And I think it's fair to wonder if you took some games off earlier or middle through your career, and I know there was a strike in one of those years, you know, does your body maybe last a little bit longer? But to Charles's point, then there's like some guys that are participating in load management that aren't stars, but then it's like, okay, how do you pick? Because a guy in middle career is trying to make the most amount of money and it's still his career. It works when you win, but only one team could win at the end of the year. So for everyone else, it makes you look like crap, but it's obnoxious as a fan when you go to a game. And I know that always guys could sit out, but if they're injured, okay, I understand the player missed a game, but if you spend all your money to go to this game and then it's like, oh, this guy's just off, he's not really hurt, we're just giving him load management, that's where it gets frustrating.
Well, I guess, too, the thing is, has it ever proved to work? Like, I guess you can argue with Kawhi Leonard and the Raptors, but it's like, you look at the Warriors, or the Warriors win because they rested Steph and Clay? Not really. Did the Bucks
and those guys
win
also get hurt?
Giannis was, you know, Giannis sat, Giannis doesn't sit. So it's like, we talk about load management, it's obviously a big issue in the NBA, and teams are doing it. But also, it doesn't really correlate to winning. And again, Kawhi Leonard's his own kind of person, and you can make the argument
that
he's even been load managed in the first place. But it does seem like it's a whole lot to do. And come playoff time, I don't think you really see that much of a difference, to be honest.
Well, there's like a difference. Like, Steph was legitimately hurt. Like, Clay was legitimately hurt.
Right, yeah, and that happens.
But when it's just... So I think we should differentiate this. For load management, when a guy is like legitimately hurt and he's coming back from an injury, I understand giving him some nights off and things like that. But when you're just sending a guy out and he's just going to go into the season missing 15 games just to do that, like that's when you lose me.
The first scenario you put out there, I don't count that as load management. I still count that as like injury management. Where you're like, load management to me, and maybe I'm wrong, is just sitting out.
Tell me how
tired.
To manage the load management.
Sitting out because, like you said, it's just, oh, back-to-back, and we can't play back-to-back just because science says we can't, even though you're healthy. That's load management.
Damian Lillard, who had 71 points last night, says he knew his team needed a big performance from him. Root Sports Northwest.
We got, I think, 23, 22 games left after this. And we need to win as many as possible. And, you know, obviously being shorthanded, I know that it's going to be a team effort, but I feel like I got to, you know, do my best to be aggressive and just try to do what I can to make sure that we get some wins. And, you know, that's all the case was tonight. I wanted to be in attack mode. I got it going, and I just stayed aggressive.
Hickey, right now, who are your three favorite players in the NBA? If you had to give me your three favorite.
Damian Lillard is definitely in there. I love watching Devin Booker. And I'll go, like, out of the box here, I guess. I'll go Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I like his game a lot.
Who?
Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
I thought his last name was Shai Gilgeous, according to one of our update anchors here. Well, Alexander.
I will say I pronounced it, I believe, the correct way.
Gotcha. My three favorite, Damian Lillard, and that's been the case for several years. Giannis Antetokounmpo. And then also Anthony Edwards. Because to go back to the load management conversation, I loved how Anthony Edwards went all Kobe Bryant when talking about load management during All-Star Weekend. Let's go to Quinn Snyder on why he wanted to start coaching now and take this job with the Atlanta Hawks.
I think the opportunity to come in now, although maybe challenging, is also an opportunity to hopefully go on a run. But also, and I think these things are not mutually exclusive, to begin to build a foundation, a culture. And you don't do that, even in a short period of time, the NBA, you hear the term foxhole a lot. And to get in the foxhole with these guys, and I think those things have the opportunity to really accelerate the building of relationships. You're faced with adversity and you go through it together collectively. And I didn't want to wait until next year to do that.
I just question the selection of the job. I would have waited until the end of the year to just see what else opens up when you are perceived to be the hottest name on the market. But hey, it's not my life. But Justin Termini joined us on Friday from SiriusXM NBA Radio. And I asked him if Quinn Snyder made the right decision in choosing to coach the Hawks.
Well, I just don't understand. First of all, I think he'd have other jobs open up for him in the offseason. He's probably the most respected guy right now without one. And then secondly, I thought he left Utah, and I said this yesterday, because he didn't want to rebuild. And then he goes down to Atlanta. And honestly, if you line these two teams up, I would say Utah's the better situation. I like Lauri Markkanen maybe as a centerpiece more than I like Trae Young, who, you know, is inefficient and is ball dominant, and Markkanen is not that. He works within the system, and they're about the same age. So I like the centerpiece more in Utah. I like all the draft picks that we have in the future there with the Jazz, unlike Atlanta, who got rid of a bunch of draft picks to build around DeJounte Murray and Trey in the backcourt. And then I also have more faith in Danny Ainge building a team than who I think is one of the two or three best GMs in the sport versus Landry Fields, who's doing this for the first time. So it's weird to me that Quinn Snyder leaves Utah, which is a better situation, because reportedly he doesn't want to rebuild, goes to Atlanta, where I think it's going to be a little tougher there than it was with the Jazz.
I don't love this situation either, because the Hawks are basically telling you with their roster, hey, we're good to go. But their play continuously shows that they're not good to go. And they got to the conference finals a few years ago, right? They added Murray. You have Hunter, you have Collins, you have Capella. Obviously, you got Trae Young and Hickey. Like, I don't think this team is anywhere close to competing. And maybe they think that you bring in Quinn Snyder, highly respected coach, he'll improve this team. And this is not just a move for now, but it's for the future. But so far, as much as people like Trae Young, he hasn't really been able to work with any coach.
Yeah, I know. He's been the coach killer for sure. And honestly, I thought kind of Quinn Snyder was going to wait for Greg Popovich to walk away maybe like 2 or 3 years and kind of scoop that job. And he ran back a lot faster than I thought, that's for sure.
Yeah, but that's not a good job either.
I would agree, but if there's history there and you like Greg Popovich and that's where you want to be, situation aside.
Like, he could have went to a job probably has a much better foundation, depending on what opens up this offseason. And I don't think he would then take another year off, but I don't really understand the move now, too. Like, I think it only gives you benefit to wait until the offseason, just see how everything shakes out.
Didn't seem like someone who was racing to get back into coaching once he stepped away from the Jazz, but here we are.
No, it's the Sean Payton factor, too.
you know, walk it away, and whatever reason you give, it's not really the actual reason. You just want it to reset and tap out. Devin McCourty says, Mac Jones is the franchise QB for the Patriots. It's courtesy of the folks at GMF. Good morning, football.
The Combine is sponsored by Noble this year. Mac is Noble. They know the future is Mac Jones. And I'm excited for this guy this year because now you get Billy O'Brien coming in as an offensive coordinator. Great success, has done well everywhere he's been offensively. He gets to come in and now work with Mac. He's going to have stability around him. I think the team is going to go get another guy to be a receiver in that offense.
Well, they better. Like, you're bringing Bill O'Brien, great. You get rid of Patricia and Judge running the offense. That's fantastic. But if you don't go get him another legit weapon, then what really does it do? Devin McCourty says there was too much work against Mac Jones last year.
Last year, you come in, you have movement. You get to work with Josh McDaniels, who I think is one of the best offensive minds in this league. You get to work with him your rookie year, and then you get Matty P with a mixture of Joe Judge, with Coach Belichick, all guys who are new to calling the actual offense. Obviously, Bill, more experience than any coach in the NFL as a head coach, really. But it's just so much movement, so much change. It's only your second year.
You know what's funny when I hear that, Hickey? It sounds so positive, but in reality, it's like the coaching stunk last year with Patricia and Joe Judge. But you listen to it just with how high energy Devin McCourty is. It's like, oh, this is like an endorsement, but you know it's not.
You got Matty P. You got Joe Judge. They both haven't coached the offense in a while. Neither called plays. Bill Belichick's in there. You're right. He did dress it up very nicely for kind of taking a shot at the offense.
That is a savvy veteran. Because, yes, that made headlines today. But I think it's more so Devin McCourty believes in Mac Jones, not that Devin McCourty takes shot at the incompetence of Joe Judge and Matt Patricia.
Learned something from his brother, I guess, in the media.
It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. That is a news brief. We will take a timeout. We'll come on back. We'll touch on a few stories when we return. Bears thinking about and looking like they'll trade the number one overall pick, maybe a Dak extension, and goodbye to Carson Wentz with the Commanders. We'll get to all that on the other side.